When the lights go out, they speak. The vanished, the cursed, the cruel. Their echoes live here. I'm Raven Vale, and you've just crossed the threshold. Welcome to Whispers from the Dark. Whispers from the Dark. The psychology of secrecy. Why hidden groups always rise to power. By Raven Vale. There is something magnetic about a closed door. Not because of what we know is behind it, but because of what we don't. A whispered meeting, an invitation that never arrived. A symbol recognized by some and invisible to everyone else. A handshake that lasts a half second longer than it should. A pressure, a pattern, a signal passed between two people who know something you do not. The moment something becomes hidden, it becomes powerful. Not necessarily because it deserves to be. Not because the secret is extraordinary, or the group is remarkable, or the knowledge inside the closed room would change everything. But because concealment itself does something to the human mind. Something ancient. Something reflexive. Something that does not wait for reason before it acts. Throughout history, secret societies have emerged again and again, in every culture, on every continent, in every era of recorded civilization. Ancient mystery schools in Greece, where initiates underwent years of preparation before being trusted with knowledge considered too powerful for ordinary minds. The Knights Templar, accumulating wealth and influence across medieval Europe until their power grew large enough to make kings afraid. Freemasonry, whose rituals, symbols, and tiered membership have fueled centuries of speculation about what they know and who they serve. Skull and Bones at Yale, whose membership list reads like a rehearsal for American power. Senators, directors of intelligence agencies, presidents. They rise, they persist, they influence. But tonight, we are not proving conspiracies. We are not unveiling secret handshakes or decoding symbols. We are asking something deeper, and I would argue, more unsettling. Why does secrecy itself create authority? Why do humans instinctively grant power to groups they cannot see? Is hidden knowledge inherently powerful? Or does power live not in the secret, but in the shadow it casts? This is Whispers from the Dark, the seduction of the unknown. The human mind is drawn to gaps. This is not poetic. It is documented cognitive science. Unfinished stories create tension that demands resolution. Unanswered questions occupy mental real estate until they are addressed. Locked rooms command attention, not because we know what is inside them, but precisely because we don't. Psychologists call it the information gap theory. When we sense a gap between what we know and what we feel we should know, curiosity intensifies into something closer to compulsion. Secrecy is a machine for manufacturing that gap. When a group signals openly or implicitly, you are not allowed to know this. The mind does not respond with indifference. It responds with elevated attention, with the immediate assumption that what is being concealed must matter. If something were trivial, it would not need protection. This is the logic secrecy exploits, deliberately or not. The mere act of concealment elevates perceived value. Gold locked in a vault feels more precious than coins on a table, even if the amounts are identical. The vault adds nothing to the gold's objective worth. It adds to our sense of its significance. Secrecy signals significance. And significance attracts attention in a world where attention is scarce. Think about how this plays out in ordinary experience. The overheard conversation you were clearly not meant to hear. The colleagues who fall silent when you approach. The room that is always locked. In each case, your attention sharpens before your reasoning even begins. Scale that experience across centuries and civilizations. A group that makes clear, through its rituals, restricted membership, and carefully guarded symbols, that it possesses knowledge unavailable to the uninitiated. The information gap does not merely attract curiosity. It attracts power, because whoever controls the gap controls what people imagine is inside it. And imagination is a far more powerful force than information. The power of exclusion. Human beings are tribal. This is not an insult. It is a description of the conditions under which our species developed. Conditions in which belonging to a group was not a social preference, but a survival requirement. To be included meant access to food, protection, cooperation, accumulated wisdom. To be excluded meant exposure, vulnerability, the kind of aloneness the ancient environment didn't permit you to survive for long. That wiring has not been removed by modernity. It has been layered over, occasionally overridden by reason, but it has not been removed. Exclusive groups activate it directly. When access is limited, when membership is restricted, criteria unclear, selection opaque, the thing being offered becomes more desirable. This is counterintuitive to the rational mind, but perfectly consistent with the ancient one. If membership is desirable, the group holding it acquires authority. The dynamic repeats across time. Ancient priesthoods restricted sacred knowledge to a small class of initiates, creating a permanent division between those who understood the divine and those who required someone else to interpret it for them. Royal courts restricted political strategy to a tight inner circle, ensuring that the power to shape kingdoms rested in the hands of those personally trusted. Medieval guilds restricted trade secrets to members who had paid their dues in years of apprenticeship, creating monopolies on quality that translated directly into economic power. Modern elite clubs restrict access to the networks that determine who gets funded, who gets appointed, who gets the opportunity that changes everything. The forms are different. The function is identical. The fewer the members, the stronger the perceived cohesion, because a small group, by definition, appears selective. Selective groups appear to have standards. Standards imply competence. Competence implies authority. And authority, perceived consistently enough by enough people, becomes real. Secrecy is not only about hiding information. It is about drawing a line. Inside. Outside. Us. Them. Those two categories, drawn clearly enough, reshape how everyone on both sides understands themselves and each other. The aura of initiation. Almost every secret society, across cultures and centuries, makes you earn your way in. The initiation ritual is so universal, appearing in ancient mystery schools, medieval knightly orders, university secret societies, fraternal organizations, military units, and indigenous rites of passage on every inhabited continent, that its recurrence is itself worth examining. What is it for? The surface explanation is selection. The ritual tests whether candidates have what the group needs: courage, loyalty, discretion, the ability to endure discomfort without breaking. But the deeper purpose is psychological, and it operates on the initiate. When someone invests significant effort or endures real hardship to gain entry to a group, something changes in their relationship to that group. Psychologists call it effort justification, the well-documented phenomenon in which we assign greater value to outcomes that cost us more to achieve. The harder it was to get in, the more the membership must be worth. This operates even when people know about it. The feeling persists. Military boot camps strip recruits of individual identity and rebuild them around the group, a process designed to produce loyalty that holds under extreme stress. The shared suffering is not a side effect. It is the mechanism. Fraternal initiations create shared experience that bonds participants through the intimacy of having been vulnerable together, of having chosen the discomfort together, of having emerged on the other side as members of something that no one outside the room fully understands. Shared secrets create intimacy. Intimacy builds relational trust, not necessarily moral trust, but the primal trust of having been inside the room together and choosing to stay. That trust becomes the group's internal cohesion. Cohesion becomes commitment. Commitment becomes identity. Identity becomes something people protect, sometimes at significant cost. The group becomes, functionally, a family. And family, for most people, is the most powerful social unit that exists. Hidden knowledge as currency. For most of human history, knowledge was not widely distributed. Literacy was the exclusive possession of religious and aristocratic elites. Not because ordinary people were incapable, but because restricting literacy was a mechanism of control so effective that the institutions benefiting from it defended it actively. Religious texts were guarded, interpreted only by those granted permission to read them. Scientific and technical knowledge was held within guilds and passed through apprenticeship rather than publication. The economic value of specialized skill remained concentrated precisely because access to it was controlled. When knowledge is scarce, it becomes currency. Secrecy artificially creates that scarcity. If only a few people understand something, regardless of whether that thing is genuinely extraordinary, those few acquire leverage over the many who do not. The leverage does not require the knowledge to be truly transformative. It requires only that others believe it might be. In Renaissance Europe, alchemists occupied a paradoxical position of cultural authority. Their fundamental claim, that base metals could be transformed into gold, that the secret of physical immortality could be unlocked through the right sequence of procedures, was almost certainly false. But kings funded them. Courts consulted them. Noble houses competed for their services. Because the belief that they might possess a transformative secret was sufficient to generate influence. The possibility, held open by deliberate obscurity and ritualized complexity, was enough. Secrecy fuels myth. Myth fuels authority. Authority reshapes institutions and redirects resources. And none of this requires the secret to be real. It requires only that it remain unverified. The psychology of trust. Here is the paradox at the center of everything we have been discussing. Secrecy, which by definition withholds information from outsiders can actually increase the trust those outsiders place in the group doing the concealing. We tend to believe trust requires transparency, that we trust what we can verify, examine, hold up to the light. But human trust does not always function that way. When a group is exclusive, when entry is difficult and membership not freely given, outsiders often respond by assuming the group must have standards, that its members were selected rather than simply accumulated, that the difficulty of entry implies something about the quality of those who made it through. We project competence onto selective groups. When membership is hidden, it suggests discretion, and discretion suggests reliability. If these people can keep a secret, if they have demonstrated by their membership itself that they understand confidentiality, they seem more trustworthy, not less. This is not always accurate. History offers many examples of secret societies whose internal organization was chaotic, whose membership was motivated by status seeking rather than competence, whose hidden deliberations produced results ranging from the mediocre to the catastrophic. But psychologically, the perception of discipline precedes evidence of it. Mystery fills in blanks with imagination, and imagination, operating on the ancient human fear of exclusion and the equally ancient respect for demonstrated selectivity, tends to exaggerate in a specific direction. We imagine hidden groups as more organized than they are, more strategic, more unified, more powerful. The curtain does not need to conceal anything extraordinary. It only needs to remain closed. The fear factor. Secrecy does something else. Beyond attracting curiosity and projecting competence, it creates unease. And unease, in the architecture of human attention, commands more focus than almost anything else. Known threats can be assessed, planned around, potentially neutralized. Unknown forces cannot. They linger at the edge of perception, neither confirmed nor dismissed, occupying the imagination with a persistence that visible dangers rarely match. Unknown forces feel larger than visible ones. A hidden council sounds more formidable than an open committee, even if the open committee is more powerful. A closed-door meeting sounds more decisive than a public forum, even if the forum produces better outcomes. The closed door implies that what happens inside it is too significant, too sensitive, too consequential for ordinary exposure. Fear amplifies perceived influence. When people cannot verify what is happening behind the curtain, speculation expands to fill the space that facts cannot. And speculation, unconstrained by evidence, follows the logic of anxiety rather than the logic of reason. Anxiety assumes the worst. It assumes coordination where there may be chaos, purpose where there may be habit, unified intent where there may be conflicting agendas held together by nothing more than shared self-interest. The rumors of secret alliances have shaped political landscapes throughout history, not because they were confirmed, but because they were possible. And possibility alone, when it carries enough emotional weight, shifts behavior. Leaders make decisions based on threats they cannot verify. Populations organize in response to power they cannot see. Institutions restructure themselves around the shadow of influence they cannot locate with precision. The group behind the closed door may or may not be doing anything consequential, but the fear of what they might be doing is itself consequential. And that fear is a form of power, one that requires no action to generate, no resources to maintain, and no accountability to sustain. historical patterns. The pattern is old enough that it begins to feel like something built into the structure of human civilization itself, from the closed senatorial councils of ancient Rome, where the most consequential political decisions were made by a body whose deliberations were not public property, where access meant everything and exclusion meant irrelevance. To the medieval knightly orders, who combined military function with ritualized brotherhood and accumulated enough wealth, land, and political leverage to become forces that secular rulers had to navigate carefully. To the fraternal societies of the Enlightenment, the Freemasons and the Rosicrucians and their many variants, emerging precisely during a period when traditional religious authority was fracturing and new intellectual and commercial classes were seeking forms of association that could provide belonging, credentialing, and network without the church. Hidden networks have repeatedly emerged at moments of social and political transition. This is not coincidence. Uncertainty increases the demand for coordination. When existing institutions are weakening, when the rules are changing, when the future is genuinely unclear, the value of a small group of trusted people who can move quickly and speak honestly increases dramatically. Open institutions move slowly. They are designed to. Transparency, accountability, representation, these are features, not bugs. But they impose friction. Decisions require consensus. Consensus requires time. Time is often the one resource a moment of genuine crisis does not offer. Small, tight-knit, secret networks move efficiently. Efficiency produces results. Results produce influence. Influence consolidates into power. It is not necessarily sinister. It may not involve any intent to harm or deceive or accumulate power at others' expense. It may be simply the structural advantage of a small group that trusts each other and can act without announcing its intentions. In any large, complex system, an empire, a church, a modern corporation, a national government, smaller, tight-knit groups gain agility by virtue of their cohesion and their willingness to operate outside the formal channels that govern the larger system. Agility translates to advantage. Advantage, accumulated over time, translates to authority. And authority that operates informally, outside official structures, becomes, almost by definition, a form of hidden power. The powerful have always known each other. They have always had rooms the public was not invited into. The question is not whether such rooms exist. The question is what decisions are being made inside them, and who bears the consequences. The paradox of visibility. Here is the paradox that history keeps producing. The more secret a group appears, the more visible it becomes in the public imagination. We talk about them, speculate about them, attribute motives and capabilities to them, build entire explanatory frameworks, entire worldviews around the premise of their influence. The Illuminati, formally dissolved in the 1780s after less than a decade of existence, have haunted the popular imagination for 2.5 centuries. Their actual historical footprint was modest. Their mythological footprint is immeasurable. Skull and Bones has never publicly claimed to do anything more than provide a social network for its members. Yet it generates a volume of speculation and anxiety entirely disproportionate to whatever its actual influence might be. Sometimes these groups wield real, documented power, the kind traceable in voting records and board memberships and policy outcomes. Sometimes they wield almost entirely symbolic power, the influence that comes not from what they do, but from what others believe they are capable of doing. But either way, secrecy ensures relevance. Because secrecy triggers narrative. The human mind cannot rest with an acknowledged gap. It will fill the gap with story, and the stories generated by hidden power are reliably more vivid, more coherent, and more dramatically satisfying than the messy, contingent, accident-prone reality that almost always lies beneath. Stories spread. Stories shape how people understand the world. And the groups at the center of those stories, whether they sought the attention or not, acquire a form of influence that persists long after their actual power has faded, if it ever genuinely existed at all. Narrative shapes society. Secrecy generates narrative. The closed door, paradoxically, is the most effective advertisement in human history. The modern elite network. In the contemporary world, secrecy has evolved. It rarely involves cloaked figures and candlelit chambers. It involves private forums that do not appear in search results. Invitation-only conferences where the participants are public knowledge, but the conversations are not, where the Chatham House rule applies, and the content of what was said belongs to the room rather than the record. Closed investment circles where deals are structured and relationships cemented before anything reaches the public market, where access to the round requires access to the network, and access to the network requires someone already inside to open the door. Encrypted communication channels used by people whose public statements and private deliberations have essentially nothing to do with each other. The technology has changed. The psychology has not. Restricted access creates value. The thing you cannot easily get into appears to be worth getting into. Shared knowledge creates bond. The information that circulates only among members becomes the substance of a shared identity, proof of inclusion, evidence of belonging, the invisible credential that does not appear on any resume. Bond creates coordination. People who trust each other can move together without the overhead of extensive negotiation, without the vulnerability of public commitment, without the friction of accountability to anyone outside the circle. Coordination creates leverage. And leverage, in a world organized around the movement of capital and the allocation of attention and the distribution of opportunity, is the only currency that matters in the end. The form has changed. The function persists. The closed door has become a private Slack channel, an off-the-record dinner, a conference whose attendee list is disclosed, but whose proceedings are not. The dynamic is identical to what it was in the courts of Renaissance princes and the lodges of 18th century Freemasons. We have modernized the ritual. We have not changed the impulse. And perhaps that is the most important thing to understand about the persistence of hidden groups across human history. Not that powerful people are uniquely corrupt or uniquely conspiratorial, but that the structures serving their needs have always existed and will always be rebuilt, because the needs themselves are permanent features of being human in a world where resources, attention, and opportunity are scarce and unevenly distributed. The closed room is not an aberration. It is an institution, one that predates every government and every legal code and every declaration of rights ever written, and it will outlast them too. Is hidden knowledge inherently powerful? This is the question that sits at the center of everything. Is hidden knowledge inherently powerful? Or is power derived from the perception of hidden knowledge, from the belief held by enough people with sufficient conviction that something important is being concealed from them? Consider the implications. If power resides in the information itself, in the actual content of what is known only by the few, then the solution is transparency. Expose the information, distribute it, and the power of the secret dissolves. But if power resides in the belief surrounding the secret, in what people imagine the secret contains, in the authority projected onto those presumed to hold it, then transparency does not necessarily dissolve the power at all. It may simply shift the narrative. History suggests the second model is closer to the truth. Revolutions have been made and unmade by the revelation of secrets, but not always in the directions their architects intended. Sometimes the exposure of hidden power only deepens the audience's conviction that greater hidden power remains. The revealed secret becomes evidence not of the limits of concealment, but of its extent. If they were hiding this, what else are they hiding? The curtain, once partially drawn back, does not reassure. It confirms that curtains exist. Power may not reside in the information itself. It may reside in the belief surrounding it. Belief is the amplifier. Secrecy is the spark. And once the belief is established, once the assumption of hidden power has been seeded in enough minds, it becomes nearly self-sustaining. It requires very little ongoing maintenance. The closed door, once noticed, stays noticed, even after it is opened. Human nature and control. Why do hidden groups rise repeatedly, across cultures that share no common history, in eras separated by centuries, in societies organized around radically different values and institutions? The answer is not in any single tradition or ideology. It is in the architecture of human psychology itself, in the features of consciousness that have remained essentially constant across the 10,000 years of recorded human civilization and the hundreds of thousands of years before it. We crave belonging, not as a preference, as a need, one that registers in the nervous system with the same urgency as hunger or thirst when it goes unmet for long enough. The experience of exclusion, of being outside the circle while others are inside it, activates the same neural pathways as physical pain. It is not metaphorical. We crave advantage, the knowledge that we have access to something others do not. Information, relationships, opportunities, produces a feeling of security that is disproportionate to its objective value. The edge, even a small one, feels like protection against the unpredictability of life. We crave certainty in uncertain times. And uncertain times, throughout history, have always been the periods when hidden groups proliferate most aggressively, because uncertainty is uncomfortable in a way that the human mind will go to considerable lengths to resolve, and a small group of trusted people who seem to know things, who move with purpose, who have a plan, offers relief from that discomfort, regardless of whether their confidence is warranted. Secrecy offers all three: belonging inside the circle, advantage through restricted access, certainty through shared narrative, a story about how the world works that only insiders possess. And once formed, these groups attract ambitious individuals with a reliability that looks almost like gravity. Ambition seeks structure. It wants a ladder to climb, a system to master, a hierarchy to ascend. Secret networks provide all of this, while simultaneously offering the intoxicating sense that the ladder exists outside the ordinary world, that what happens inside the circle operates by different rules. Structure, once established, seeks influence. It tends toward growth, toward expanding its reach, toward drawing more resources and more talented people into its orbit. Influence accumulates. This is not a cynical observation. It is a description of how power has always moved through human systems, not through mustache-twirling villainy, but through the structural advantages of tight coordination, shared trust, and the willingness to act before the broader public has even identified that a decision is being made. It is less about conspiracy and more about natural selection within power systems. Closed groups optimize for loyalty and coordination, the qualities that produce agility and coherent action. Open systems optimize for diversity and transparency, the qualities that produce resilience and legitimacy. Both have genuine strengths. Both are necessary for healthy societies. But in moments of crisis, when speed matters more than legitimacy and coordination, matters more than representation, tight circles move faster. And speed, at the moments in history when it matters most, can reshape everything that comes after. The Shadow and the Light. Secrecy is not inherently evil. This is worth saying clearly, because the atmosphere of this episode, and the subject matter of secret societies in general, tends to pull toward a conclusion that is too simple. Confidentiality protects genuinely vulnerable things. The privacy of individuals, the safety of people whose identities or locations, if known, would put them in danger. The integrity of deliberations that require honest exchange between people who cannot speak honestly if they know they are being recorded and judged. Strategic planning requires discretion. You cannot negotiate effectively if your opening position is public. You cannot protect people if your methods are fully transparent to those who wish them harm. Military operations, legal strategies, personal medical decisions. These are all legitimate domains of confidentiality. Even social secrets serve real functions. Surprise parties. Personal struggles shared in confidence. The private deliberations of a group trying to build something before they are ready to defend it publicly. Privacy at every scale preserves dignity and enables the kind of thinking that cannot happen under constant observation. But secrecy becomes dangerous at the precise point where accountability disappears, where decisions that impact millions of people are made by small groups with no obligation to explain themselves to anyone, where the myth of hidden power shields specific, concrete misconduct from the scrutiny that would otherwise expose it. Where the structure of the secret, the oaths, the loyalty, the relational bonds of shared initiation makes it impossible for members to speak honestly about what they know is happening. The danger is not in the meeting behind the closed door. The danger is in the absence of any door that ever opens. Power thrives best when balanced by transparency. Not constant surveillance, not the elimination of all privacy, but the kind of accountable transparency that makes abuses visible to someone with the authority to address them. Yet transparency weakens mystique, and mystique is genuinely intoxicating for leaders who feel the authority the mystery confers, for members who feel the belonging and distinction that exclusivity provides, for observers who are drawn to the story whether they believe it or not. The shadow is not merely the darkness where bad things happen. The shadow is also where humans have always sought the sacred, the hidden, the numinous, the thing that cannot be seen directly, but can be felt in its effects. The Mystery School and the corrupt backroom deal occupy the same architectural space in the human psyche. We built both. We have always built both. The two are not always easy to tell apart. And that difficulty is not a failure of intelligence. It is a consequence of the fact that secrecy and the power it generates is genuinely ambiguous in ways that resist clean resolution. The enduring cycle. Hidden groups rise. They accumulate influence through the mechanisms we have traced, the information gap they manufacture, the exclusivity they maintain, the initiation rituals that build loyalty, the projected competence that generates trust, the fear that amplifies their perceived power. They shape events, sometimes dramatically, sometimes modestly. Sometimes their influence is largely mythological, more about what people believe they are doing than what they are actually doing. They fade, or they transform. They are exposed and dissolved, or they evolve into something more institutional and less hidden, or they simply become less relevant as the conditions that made them powerful shift, and new ones emerge. Always, reliably, across every culture and every century. Not because of ancient curses, not because of supernatural guidance, or the working out of some cosmic plan, but because the psychological conditions that generate hidden groups are permanent features of human life. The craving for belonging, the hunger for advantage, the need for certainty, the seductive power of the exclusive circle. As long as these things are true of human beings, and there is no indication they are changing, the cycle continues. The formula is elegant in its simplicity. Exclusivity creates desire. Mystery creates authority. Shared secrets create loyalty, and loyalty creates power. But power concentrated in small, unaccountable groups is power removed from the people it affects. And the people it affects rarely know it is happening, until they do. And by then, the group has often already moved on to the next closed door. The next time you hear about a closed door meeting, a summit whose attendee list is disclosed but whose proceedings are not, a society with rituals and oaths, an invitation that went to some people and not to you. Pause. Ask yourself the question that matters more than any theory of conspiracy. Is the power in what they know, or in what we imagine they know? Because these are not the same thing, and the difference between them is where most of the real danger lives. Secrecy does not automatically mean corruption. History offers too many examples of confidentiality in service of genuine protection for that conclusion, to be honest. But it also offers too many examples of secrecy as armor for misconduct, as the mechanism by which small groups extracted enormous advantages from populations who had no idea the extraction was happening, for the opposite conclusion to be comfortable. Hidden groups will always rise, because the conditions that produce them are permanent, because humans will always be drawn to the circle, to the door, to the whisper, to the sense that somewhere, behind the silence, something important is happening, and that if you could only get inside, you would finally understand how the world actually works. Maybe something important is happening. Maybe the secret is worth what they say it is. Or maybe the most powerful thing about the closed door is simply that it stays closed, and we keep standing in front of it, wondering, waiting, believing, somewhere beneath the skepticism, that the answer to how power really works is just behind the door we were never invited to open. That belief, persistent, ancient, essentially impossible to fully extinguish, is itself a form of power, the most durable form, because it requires no maintenance, no organization, no secret meeting. It simply lives in us, and always has. This has been Whispers from the Dark. I'm Raven Vale, and remember, sometimes the greatest power is not in the secret itself, but in the shadow it casts.